welcome to another episode of the Gonzo Chronicles. This is Cyrus Alderwood. Thanks for tuning in, and thanks to Blueshammer for that bumper music, as always. I was going to slip a your mom joke in there in the music, but not today, not because of the last email I got from Catherine the Piss, but I'm going to get into something a little bit more serious today. I did get another email, and I just kind of wanted to address it today because this is twice this week my book, Revelation Calling, has kind of come back with some comments from people. No one ever usually comments, you know? But this week, a couple things. The last email I got was actually from a friend of mine, Jason, who was reading the book, and said that, you really don't hold back political opinions or point of view, you know, in the this book. You know, in a way, he's right. And I started to think about that. I was like, was there something specific I said? Or, and I was about to ask him, but I thought, you know what, just kind of let your thoughts go in general and talk a little bit about how politics came into this book that was supposed to be a murder mystery and a deep state thriller, kind of like based on a conspiracy theory. But are there conspiracies really? I don't believe in conspiracies, but I don't believe in coincidences either. So I thought, you know, let's talk a little bit about this morning and a little bit about that book. And I'm a little bit loaded for bear, so this is going to get like really into what's going on right now politically. And it was all based on my view of the world in general and what's happening politically and culturally, not just here in America, but around the world, really. And is it a good thing or a bad thing? We're in the midst of the weirdest year. We have been so divided politically, and I guess that's bled over into our culture to some degree over the last, gosh, you know, I'm not just going to say the Trump years. This was the Obama years and probably leading up to that, even during the Bush years. Long gone are the days of the 80s and 90s where people could be a Democrat or Republican, still go out and have a beer and talk and hang out. Now, I'm still like that. But people in general just are so much more polarized and divided. And you have to ask yourself why. That just didn't happen overnight. That has been fostered and developed, I think, in not just our, you know, our media, our culture, and our politics. This is kind of a, you know, whether it's a design strategy, you know, who knows. But all one has to do is go back and read that book, Manufacturing Consent, by Noam Chomsky, who's a well-known left-winger, to understand that, you know, the culture can impact the society at large, and that there were programs. I talked about one of them on a podcast in the past called Operation Mockingbird, or Project Mockingbird, whatever it's called, about controlling the media narrative from the CIA. Because if you can control the narrative, you can control people. And so go look that up. All right, so that's another topic. But in a way, you can get off on that. But I'm not going to get off on that. You know, if you take a look at what's going on in our culture, divide and conquer has been a strategy that's been around for a long, long time. And a lot of people, I guess the first thing I thought of when I thought about divide and conquer, which is a theme throughout the entire book, Revelation Calling, what happens to people in our society, that they're easy to rule if you divide and conquer them culturally, politically, morally, emotionally, have people pitted against each other for whatever damn reason or another you want. So I always, you know, initially thought Sun Tzu, that's always the go-to in the Art of War about dividing and conquering. But I just did a quick web search and I found a really good article in the Tribune, and this was from September 17th of this year. And this, I think this was written actually by the editor. So I'm going to read two or three paragraphs of this, and then I'll post the link up on my Facebook page and on Twitter if anybody wants to read it. It's editor the Tribune. It's called Divide and Rule. It's the title of it. The strategy of divide and conquer was first developed by Sun Tzu, a Chinese general, 2,500 years ago. In the West, the divide your enemy so you can rule approach is attributed to Julius Caesar. He successfully applied it to conquer Gaul 22 centuries ago. Elements of this technique involve creating or encouraging division among the subjects to prevent alliances that could challenge the sovereign, aiding and promoting those who are willing to cooperate with the sovereign, fostering distrust and enmity between local rulers, encouraging meaningless expenditures that reduce the capability for political and military spending. The Caribbean have inherited this tendency to divide and rule from the British. It is inherent in the Westminster system as the ruling party and the opposition. It is meant to keep people divided and benefiting from one party and disliking the other. The creation and perpetuation of Hindu-Muslim antagonism was the most significant accomplishment of British imperial policy. The colonial project of divide et impera, which is divide rule, fomented religious antagonisms to facilitate continued imperial rule and reached its tragic culmination in 1947. The British divided up the Middle East after World War I, and they did it again in India. The Caribbean and the Bahamas continued the British system of divide and rule. Loyalty is more important than competence for executive position and government and related private sector. I'm going to read that sentence again. Let this sink in and think about our elected officials when I say this. Loyalty is more important than competence for executive position and government and related private sector. The question I ask is, will we mindless continue a system that has created crime and poverty for the many with a few elites that acts as managers so the developed world can plunder the country's resources? Well, so think about that. Loyalty is more important than competence. Well, we certainly see that in our political leaders, so-called leaders, let me put it that way. And this is on both sides of the aisle. I've seen bumbling Democrats, bumbling Republicans. And, you know, George Carlin had a famous rant one time in one of his comedy acts talking about all these elites. It's a big club, and we ain't in it, folks. You have to wonder, you know, when they say that when people fear the government, there's tyranny. But when the government fears people, there's freedom. Well, I don't know anybody that fears the people from the government perspective. But there are a whole hell of a lot of people in the middle of this pandemic that fear their government. Mayors threatening fines if you have more than 6 or 10 people over for Thanksgiving. This is your home. This is a national holiday. What right? Did anybody pass a law saying I couldn't have more than 10 or 15 people in my home for Thanksgiving? Or they had to live here? I can't have somebody from outside the immediate family? These governors are saying this. And, you know, there may be a pandemic and the sickness is real, not belittling it, but they're using it as fear to divide and conquer. Case in point, go to Twitter, go to Facebook. How many people do you see arguing and separating each other? The idiots don't wear masks. The smart people, they wear the masks. And then from the other perspective, all the people who just want to turn themselves over to government rule, they'll wear the mask and do anything they're told. People who love freedom and don't buy into this BS, you know, argument, they don't wear the masks. Well, congratulations. The media and politicians and big corporations have successfully divided us. There's some people who think, well, I'm not getting that vaccine. And other people can't wait to go get it. You know? But it doesn't matter because who's the big Ticketmaster? You can't buy tickets to go to concerts through Ticketmaster now unless you've had that vaccine. So, hey, if you're not one of the people that, you know, and you may be perfectly healthy, but you're not allowed to go to a concert because you haven't submitted to a vaccine. That's the way some people look at it. That's the way I look at it. I've never had a flu shot in my life. I can, and, you know, since we always say like 9/11 is a point in time when people remember where they were at that day. So just to use that as a point of reference, I can count on one hand the number of times I've been sick since 9/11. And I've never had a flu shot. And I'm not going to start now. Why would I go inject the flu in me? You know, if my immune system is good enough, then fine. I'm happy with it. I'm not going to get a flu shot. When I get older, that may change. But until then, no. Do I plan on getting lining up to get this virus vaccine, COVID-19 vaccine? No. This is a virus, apparently, that has a 99.8% survival rate. I'll take my chances. I got a better shot at getting hit by a train. You know, and again, I'm not belittling what's happened to people. People have been sick. But, you know, no one forces people to get vaccinated for the flu every year. No one forces people to get vaccinated for pneumonia every year. And yet you can still go out and eat and all this stuff. But it's going to come down to a point where it's like, well, you have this. It almost reminds you of that book in the book of Revelation where it says, you know, no man can buy or sell lest he have the mark. It strikes of that. You know, I'm not saying this is a mark of the beast. It's just this garbage like this to divide and conquer people. This is just one example with the pandemic. The other's the vote. Now, to be fair about that, too, there is, let me see if this is still up here. Let's see. I had it on the screen, but it refreshed. There was an article just before this election. It was that was in, I forgot that it was a major newspaper, maybe USA Today, that questioned the validity of the Dominion voting system. And, you know, people are screaming on both sides of the aisle now. Well, it's not really both sides of the aisle. It's like people who like Trump and people who don't like Trump. Democrats, and then you have Republicans that are never Trumpers. And they don't want a recount. They want him to concede and move on. And now the legal team is saying, yes, we've won this. We're going to prove it in a couple of weeks. Let's go through this process. We went longer than this with Bush and Gore. And people screamed about it back then in 2000. When Bush beat Gore, and it came down to those hanging chads in Florida. Yeah, I'm old enough to remember that. Let me load up on some caffeine here. But for as long as I've been voting, people have complained about these electronic voting systems. Not just Dominion, but any of them. I am very skeptical of any election I've ever voted in has been 100% legit. And I will tell you why. Not just going back to 2018, Nancy Pelosi cried foul about Dominion voting and wanted recounts. Same thing in 2016 with the Hillary versus Trump elections. But this goes back to right after Bush-Gore in 2000. I remember watching a documentary put out by HBO, no less, of a guy back then who said, just bring me the machine. And he literally said, okay, turn your head for a minute, and then like they didn't film it, but the camera was still on. You could see his back and see exactly what he was doing. And anyway, you come back, and like literally just a few seconds later, he's like, okay, now take a look at your vote totals. He actually manipulated the vote total between Bush and Gore in a few seconds. He was a hacker. He knew how to do this. He said it was not hard. So even back then, you had to be able to had to question the validity of any of these systems. And, you know, for the life of me, I don't understand why. And people want to cry like racism and, you know, suppression of the vote. Listen, if you don't have a driver's license, you can still go to the DMV or the BMV, whatever you call it in your state, and get an ID. It's not hard to do. Anybody can walk in and do it. If you're a citizen of this country, you can go do that. And those are the people who should be voting in our country. Legal votes. All legal votes have to count. Period. I don't understand how, if you're a Democrat or Republican, that's not just common sense. because, you know, it brought up to me, like, you know, earlier, and I told you about that email about Revelation Calling, I didn't hold back my politics. Well, yeah, I wouldn't pigeonhole myself as being Democrat or Republican. I'm a common sense person. I'm a pragmatist. It's not like I've changed since the 90s, you know, since I was in high school and college. But the culture has wildly changed. I don't think most of you listening to this right now honestly have changed your thoughts or opinions on things. I mean, you may have, you know, maybe on some things, but your worldview as a whole, maybe not. You know, and you look around, it's like, wow, this, you know, the world kind of changed on me. Politics changed. It got a lot nastier than it used to be. It's always been nasty. It's always been a nasty business. Hate it. So let me ask you a question, since we're going to divide and conquer ourselves over a virus, over a vaccine, over voting, what is a legitimate vote and what isn't. You know, if common sense is the new counterculture. I've been saying this for like 5 years. And, you know, I don't understand how people have bought into a narrative. And it's all emotion, really. Clickbait from media. Clickbait from Hollywood people. Your sports stars telling you how to vote and what's important and what's not important. Everybody's trying to influence the way you think. And if they can get you feeling something, you're not thinking. And that's the purpose of media. That's the purpose of divide and conquer. And I love seeing rallies where you have people from all walks of life there. You know, and there's a big difference between a rally and a peaceful rally. And then half of these like violent protests and people masked up walking down the street beating the shit out of strangers that don't agree with them. Okay, that's not Antifa. That's fascism, folks. That's those people, like, to me, at this point, that's evil. But, you know, I try to have a worldview of, like, good and evil, not Democrat, Republican. Because I know a lot of Democrats that they don't like what's going on either in the party. They don't like what's going on in the culture. And one of the reasons why I bring up good and evil as, you know, dividing lines is, you know, when you worship at the altar of politics, that suddenly is so important to you in your life. It might as well be your philosophy. It might as well be your religion, your guiding point in your life. And if it is that important, and if that is your religion, is politics, the Democrat platform, the Republican platform, whatever it is, or worshiping at the altar of a politician, like people did, and some people do with Trump, and some people, and a lot of people do with Obama. You know, sorry, folks, man. When I see people bowing down to any leader like that, that's idol worship. I'm not into that. I don't trust any politician enough to do that. You know, I don't care what side of the aisle they're on. No one's a Boy Scout in this, and, you know, people don't like the way Trump talked, but, you know, we vote for president, not for Pope. You know, sorry about my message here. You know, so as I got into Revelation Calling, that was kind of my worldview. It was like common sense. There's corruption aplenty on both sides of the aisle. And I want to ask you a question. And feel free, anybody has any thoughts on this, drop me an email, cyrus.alderwood@gmail. I'll read it on the following show. If you go before Congress, you go before a committee, and you're summoned to answer questions, what happens if you lie to that politician, or lie to that committee, or lie to Congress? You're held in contempt. You can be imprisoned, you can be fined, probably lose your job. Your reputation will be ruined no matter where you went. It's like somebody making a false accusation against you and your life is ruined, you know. But that's what happens when you go to Congress and you lie to them. Well, unless you're the guy who owns Twitter, or Zuckerberg who owns who owns Facebook, or Google, the guy who runs Google. Yeah, you can go there and lie your ass off if you're one of the elite, okay? However, if it's you or I, we have there are consequences. But those very same people, every day in those chambers that you and I pay for, and the blood of our ancestors built. Those people lie to us every day. Those people in the... And so why is it okay for them to lie to us? And then they come out and campaign every couple of years, you know, when they need the money and when they need the attention, they'll come out and talk to you. So why is it okay for them to lie and blow smoke up our ass? And they get away with it all the time. Using our money, no less. But when we lie to them, we go to jail. We get fined. Our lives are ruined. That's the difference right there between freedom and tyranny, if you ask me. So I will break it down to even something as simple as that. These people blow smoke up our asses all the time. And we worship them for it. These people, going back to that other article, they care more about loyalty than they care about competence. So it brings my question as to what in the hell are they loyal to? Why do you have people divided so hard in this country? Well, yeah, that's a strategy. But when I was doing the case file on Revelation Calling, the book I wrote that kind of raised these questions this week, I'm going to take another drink here. I made a couple of trips. Well, I made a trip down to a little town called Elberton, Georgia, because I wanted some sort of conspiracy theory to be the background of the book, you know, something to start the thriller off, you know. This is a wild, deep state adventure, no less. And when I started working on this, we didn't have the Epstein thing that broke. Epstein broke after I wrote this. And the crazy thing was, when I wrote this, I inked in the Epstein background. I wrote it in. Because I'd heard of Epstein. And I always wondered why that punk got off so easy. And he was still, you know, running around. Then he got arrested like 3 months after the book was published. So I used that whole deep state cabal from that and the Georgia Guidestones that were put up in Elberton, Georgia. So what are these people loyal to? Like, it comes down to, in my opinion, which patriotic people who love the country. All right. Now, you can have different opinions on how to solve issues. I mean, these are legitimate debates and questions, Democrat, Republican. But I don't know many people that hate their country. Now, the media will show you that shit on TV all the time, walking down the street with their Chinese flag or a communist flag, beating the hell out of people, intimidating the elderly. That's evil, folks. So, and then you have an entire group of politicians who ignore it. You have a handful of mouthpieces that go on TV and talk about it all the time. But for the vast majority of politicians, almost all the entire Democrat Party, especially those on the far left, the Nancy Pelosi's, Maxine Waters. Remember the one that yelled, "Get in their faces, don't even let them pump gas, they're not welcome here to eat." And then now after this election, you see people posting up, left-wing people and people in power and influence, making posts on Twitter and Facebook about how are we going to re-educate all these people who voted the other way. What are you, Nazis? Those people literally might be. But the vast majority of people that I know, Democrat and Republican, are patriotic people that love their country. And that's great. But then we have other people who are more globalist in worldview. And I'm not in that camp. Love my country. The good and the bad, all of it. You know, we have a lot of amazing history that's so good that people need to learn and be proud of their country. And there are moments they're not so proud. We need to start reteaching history to our students, in my opinion. All of it. The good, the bad, and the ugly. But let's not hate our country. Because when we do that, we're hating ourselves. And maybe that's what people that are trying to influence us and divide and conquer want. I'm about tired of this phone. So, you know, if you go back to any kind of deep state theory or conspiracy theory, you know, I don't believe in conspiracies, but I don't believe in coincidences. Back in 1980, in Elberton, Georgia, which is about 90 miles east of Atlanta, someone went to that town and had this monument erected at the highest peak in the county. And they picked Elberton because, in Elbert County, because that's actually the home of the granite capital of the world, as they call it. Because, and if, you know, when you go to the cemetery and you see the headstones, and a lot of things are made of granite. But anyway, there's a lot of granite down there, and it's like they call it the granite capital of the world. So somebody wanted to build a monument, basically in honor of the New World Order, to promote the New World Order, in my opinion, okay? They set this thing up to look like Stonehenge, in a way. So some people, if you do a Google search on America's Stonehenge or Georgia Guidestones, you'll easily find it, okay? I'm just going to give you a quick little background on it, and then I'm going to read the guides that are actually on there. And it's going to be alarming, well, to most. And I'll kind of cover both angles of it, but there's one slab in the center, right? And then there's four surrounding it, and then one capstone. And on it, etched in, like carved into these 20-foot slabs, right? They're tall. There's 10 guidelines, and it's for a new age of reason, as they call it. It's put in 8 modern languages, and there's a shorter message at the top on the capstone, and it's carved in 4 ancient languages. There's another stone set in the ground just to the west of the structure, and it has some notes and history and the purpose of the guide stones. It's 19 feet 3 inches tall. It weighs 237,000 pounds. So what had happened is a man by the name, using the name of Robert C. Christian, went to Elberton Granite Finishing Company on behalf of a small group. He said he represented the small group. And laid out the plans of what he wanted to do. Now, the owner at the time thought the guy was nuts. He didn't really want to do it. So he gave this guy an estimate that was fabricated, way overpriced. Guy was still going to do it anyway. So Robert C. Christian said they had been planning the stones for 20 years. And they were to remain anonymous. That was his catch. He would pay whatever he needed to pay, but they had to be anonymous. And his name wasn't Robert C. Christian either, which ironically sounds a lot like Rosicrucian from Robert C. Christian, Rosicrucian. So anyway, the guy at the bank goes out. He goes, he would do it as long as he went to a local bank, deposited the money, had the money there, so they knew he was going to be able to pay for it before we do it. So he goes to the bank, and the only two people who knew who this guy was the guy at the granite company and the president of the bank, because he wouldn't work with anybody at the bank except the president. So the president took him out and said, oh, we're going to find some land. And they found a spot. It was the highest place in the land, which the Cherokee used to be Cherokee land, by the way, and it was sacred land. And the Cherokee actually said that spot right there was the highest point in the county, and that they considered the center of the universe, center of the world. So Robert C. Christian bought this land, which was next to a farm. The farmer actually would say it was his property, but he bought it there, and he put up the stones. And later he transferred it back to Elbert County, the ownership of the stones, that they had to keep it up forever. That was part of the deal. So who in the hell could go in, pay all this money, set up a bank account, pay this company, wiring funds, and not have any kind of trace anywhere of who he was, even with IRS, after buying property, you know? There'd have to be records of that. So who is powerful enough that you could erase those records? I don't know. Somebody does, but they all took it to their grave, because to this day, no one knows who Robert C. Christian is. But here's what it boils down to. Here are the 10 guides. And to me, this reeks of Marxism, which is exactly what's being preached by the far left today. It's frightening. The first one, and some of these actually sound nice, okay? I mean, so some of these you could be like, yeah, that does sound beautiful, but, you know, sometimes you gotta put lipstick on a pig to sell it, you know? That's I've heard a million times in the brokerage business. But number one, you maintain humanity under 500 million in perpetual balance with nature. Wow, okay. There's how many on the planet? 7 billion. So who's going to kill 6.5 billion people? I don't know. You tell me. And who decides who gets to stay? It's not a great question. Number two, guide reproduction wisely, improving fitness and diversity. Well, doesn't that kind of reek as state-run eugenics? Kind of does to me. Number three, unite humanity with a living new language. Well, okay, if we're not all speaking English, what are we going to be speaking? Mandarin? Or it's a new language, so we all have to learn something new? That's interesting. Rule passion, faith, tradition, and all things with tempered reason. Now, at the face value of that, that sounds actually kind of nice, you know, tempered reason and all things. But who defines what tempered reason is? We have Christmas coming up. It's a holiday. Now, some people, like Gavin Newsom in California, might think it reasonable that you don't worship at church on Christmas, or that you stay home at Christmas, regardless of your faith. Because in tempered reason, there's a pandemic, and people are nervous. Actually, that is very scary in and of itself. Because who gets to decide these things? If it's some of our governors, well, we're in deep shit. Number five, protect people and nations with fair laws and just courts. Well, that sounds great on the surface. But again, who gets to decide what are fair laws? Is it we the people? Or people who deem themselves more as rulers and not elected officials? Because we have, like I said, we're in the middle of this pandemic, and we see so many elected officials stepping way past their bounds constitutionally, not just the federal constitution, but their state constitutions. What right does anybody have to put a mandate on people to lock them down in their homes? You know, our rights don't stop because of the flu. You know, so, but then again, we've made all that so political. And here's number six. Let all nations rule internally, resolving external disputes in a world court. Well, we already have sort of a world court, you know, through the United Nations. But are the values of somebody else that sits on that court going to be different than your values, your Western values? What if something happens between two countries in the West, they go before a world court, and you have a judge who's a communist from a communist country sitting there deciding? Well, that's not going to be fair to anybody now, is it? Because what are we running to? Are we running toward Marxism? Avoid petty laws and useless officials. Hey, I think we could all agree on that. But, you know, I think, you know, you can always take another side. You can play devil's advocate with any one of these. Number eight, which strikes me as just Marxism watered down. Balance personal rights with social duties. Okay, well, that is Marxism. Why would you give up any of your rights? You know, because we all have the same rights. Why would any of us give it up for anything? I mean, you can make an argument of social duties, but what is that social duty? I mean, we live in a world where people are, you know, now going out scouring for toilet paper again. Yeah, I mean, who's to decide what these social duties are and what kind of rights are you going to give up? Because once you start giving up one right, they're going to take another, then another, and then another. We've seen this in history over and over. Number nine, truth, beauty, love, seeking harmony with the infinite. Number 10, be not a cancer on the earth, leave room for nature, leave room for nature. Now, the tablet to the west says that there was a time capsule buried under the tablet, but it doesn't say when it's going to be opened. But it does say there, let these guidestones be to an age of reason. Now, at the time this went up, we were in the middle of a Cold War. So there's some argument that says, you know, what if we nuked ourselves and society had to begin again? Because, you know, that's very possible. And also, this guidestones is laid out astrologically. When they carved in those languages, they had to bring people in from the United Nations to translate so that the people that carved into these slabs of granite could get the correct translations and knew exactly what symbols to put for letters, like in Japanese and Chinese and whatnot, Russian. So, I mean, there were all these languages that were represented. By 2017, the world population was 7.6 billion. You would have to exterminate 7.1 billion. Now, there have been, and I don't have the sheet with me. I thought I'd brought it in here to sit down and do this. But there was, I have a printout of 4 or 5 pages of quotes from high-ranking officials in public health, politicians, corporate leaders, including Bill Gates, including people in the Bush administration, in the Clinton administration, the Obama administration, that all talked about eugenics, that all talked about overpopulation, the need to eliminate a certain number of the population, all in the name of globalism. Well, globalism is running smack dab into the middle of people around the world losing their rights. And there are places in the world where people don't have rights like we do here in America. That's why we're the last best hope. We lose them here, no one else is getting them. And all you have to do, we're one generation away from everything that this country has become to being, you know, I know it's cliche, but Venezuela. Being run by... You know, are we serfs or are we citizens? Are we citizens or are we subjects? And I make that comment to several people on Twitter from time to time. So what am I as far as political when it comes to this book, Revelation Calling, where I had this as the background, and I showed that there was a deep state willing to manipulate not just media, but people and divide and conquer. And if they wanted to have, and this is one part where I said if they wanted to have a riot in Atlanta tomorrow afternoon over whatever, they could whip it up in a heartbeat and have half the city burned down. That's how powerful they are. That's how they divide and conquer. And I had a lot of the human trafficking element as the underpinning. So my worldview, my politics, is not necessarily Democrat versus Republican, because I realize that's a way that people divide and conquer in this country. You have to ask yourself, no matter how you vote, we have certain things we want, all of us in common. Better schools for our kids to have a better future. We'd love to see the cost of college come down, the cost of medicines be able to come down. Why can't we get medicines faster? We want to see the public health much better. We want to see people's freedoms flourish and their economy flourish. We want to see people successful. You know, and that those are things we want, and we have different ideas on how to get there, and that's okay. But we're united in the fact that we want the same things. But if you can whip one side up thinking, hey, anybody on the other side is willing to take my gun rights away tomorrow, and the other side actually think they would actually do it, well, then boom, divide and conquer. I mean, you can divide and conquer over every single amendment that is part of our guaranteed rights. And now we're even, having arguments over free speech, because we have, if somebody says something you don't like on a campus, oh, for the love of God, if you don't riot and burn it down, you got to find a safe space, because apparently we've raised such a wuss generation that if we tried to teach the truth, they'd break down and cry. Now, there's really an element of people like this. I've never seen in my life watching a sports show and somebody gets offended over something of a phrase that somebody says that had no meaning whatsoever toward offending. Or somebody, I was watching this NFL Good Morning, whatever, on NFL Network, and somebody had tweeted out something about It was probably something related to this flu. You know, that they thought it was not as bad as people, you know, the media makes it out to be, which is always the case. And the lady on there is like, I'm totally offended he said that. Totally offended. I want a public apology. Well, why do you feel like he owes you an apology? You know what I mean? People have opinions, and it's okay to have opinions. You can't demand people apologize every single time if you hear something you don't like. But that is where we're at in the culture. It may not be where you and I are at, but it's where we're at in the culture. It's what they show constantly in the media. Oh, we have to walk on eggshells what we say or how we say it. We're going to offend somebody's delicate ears. I mean, I remember after 9/11, we were all united for a while, and now we're not. You know, we walked on eggshells not to offend countries that hated us. Why? You know, I mean, there's just so many things that doesn't make sense. You know, we all want a balanced budget. Some of these things are so easy to do that if they would just go in and vote one issue at a time, they would solve a lot of these problems. But you ask yourself why they don't. And don't give me politics as the answer, like, you know, the negotiation process. We've all been waiting on an extra stimulus here for God knows how long, while people sit home with no income or no job to go back to. Or somebody who had a small business that was shut down because of this and not allowed to reopen. I remember driving up to, there's a Walmart nearby. Everybody has a Walmart nearby. And I thought to myself, why can Walmart stay open? And the guy who sells shoes down the street at the shoe store cannot. So Walmart can sell shoes, but he can't. Tell me where the freedom is in that. Because if they can social distance in Walmart and wear a mask, they can social distance at this guy's store. You know, totally unfair. But a lot of these problems can be solved. You just have to ask yourself why they're not. And it's about dividing and conquering people. And I'm afraid most of our politicians today, even now when it comes to recounting, they make everything so political. Everything is a means to divide and conquer people. Because if everybody got together and realized they had the same goals in common, well, where the hell would these elected officials be? Who would ever elect them again? And we need to do a better job, folks, of vetting people at the very local level. Because from your school board to your mayor to your city town council makes a huge difference. And that is where I come down politically. Find common sense, practical people that don't have a far left or far right agenda. People that look at progress and not progressivism. Big difference. And we're living in an interesting time right now. I don't know what's going to happen to this election. Do I think it was a fair election? Hell no. I don't suspect any of them that I've ever voted in have been really fair. But maybe Biden won fair and square. And if so, then we have to move on. And if he didn't, then we damn well better fix what's going on, or our votes may never count again. That's the scary part to me. Anyway, I've ranted on probably long enough about this. But just keep in mind that divide and culture. I banged on that theme, divide and conquer. I banged on that theme so hard in Revelation Calling. And there was a reason for it. And it's a very much a deep state thriller, because is there a deep state? Is there a nefarious little group over there plotting to take over the world? Hell, I don't know, maybe. But there's certainly a lot of corrupt people with a globalist worldview that the ends justify the means no matter what they do. That's dangerous. That's deep state. And that needs to be rooted out if we're ever to keep our republic. Because we're not a democracy, folks. I don't care how many times people say we got to protect our democracy. Yeah, we need to protect the integrity of our vote. And every election probably ought to be audited, for that matter. But we're a constitutional republic. And even at the state level, people are, you know, if the ends justify the means, how many people are willing to commit a crime or pay the price? Well, we're going to find out probably the next 2 or 3 weeks. But regardless, if I don't, I'll probably do another show before Thanksgiving. But if you don't tune in, I hope everybody has a great Thanksgiving. And if you have any thoughts on this or any topics you want me to cover, then certainly let me know. Cyrus.Alderwood@gmail.com. Find me online, or you can find me at CyrusAlderwood.com online at my website. I'm on Amazon, so if anybody's interested in picking up Revelation Calling, hey, folks, I don't make much money off of these things. I'm self-published, no marketing, so if you buy a book, I'd appreciate the living hell out of it. Let me know what you think of the book. It was one of those books. It was like my red pill. I felt the need to write it. Kind of felt like it was a calling to write it. So take that for what it's worth, and we all move forward. And, you know, if we stay together, our best days are ahead of us. But if we let people in power, in media, politics, culture, and entertainment, you know, Hollywood, music, anything, divide and conquer people based on issues and on race or orientation, any of that garbage, you know, then we have to worry about our future. Just don't let it happen. It's happened long enough. It's time to put a stop to it. And that starts by every one of us looking in the mirror and being willing to, you know, reach out to other people, whether they agree with us or not, and realize, hey, we're going to be a civilized nation. And all this other crap that we see that they shove down our throats on television and the news, unacceptable. We can put a stop to it tomorrow. And by God, the next election, we can certainly put a stop to every one of these politicians on both sides of the aisle that fleece off of all of us, fleece off their names and get rich while the rest of us bust our ass and pay more in taxes. Some things just aren't fair, folks. Not that life is fair, but hey, at least we can do is make it fun and try to make it fair at the end. Our best days are ahead of us. Keep that in mind. Hey, thanks for tuning in, everybody, and I'll see you on down the road at the next episode.